Testing, testing, 1, 2. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the Scientology Chat podcast. I am apparently intro guy, so hello. And I am here with the actual host of this podcast.
Okay, So if we're back a little bit sooner than you originally thought we were going to be. We decided to make a bit of a change to the schedule. The response to the first episode was a bit unexpected to happen so quickly. So we're going to try to do this twice a week now to cover more of the topics and answer more of the questions because so many of them were coming in. I definitely want to say thank you to the people, the current and former Scientologists who sent in messages talking about what we talked about in the first episode, what we were going to be doing, and just all of the different information that I got. I definitely appreciated it. So in this episode, we're going to talk about what Scientologists actually do to practice their religion. On a day-to-day basis and kind of how it works in a Church of Scientology, since most people don't actually know what goes on in there. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was I wanted to recap something based off of a question that I got via email where we had talked about how Scientology doesn't give away things for free, why the books and the courses cost money. To get a recap of that, you can kind of go, it goes into more detail in the first episode. I would definitely encourage to listen to that if you haven't already. But I did want to say that Scientology does provide services and different things for free. It's specific materials and courses that are related to the materials that are that cost. So things like the Way to Happiness program, there are aspects of Narcanon, which is the Church of Scientology's drug rehab program. That is provided at no charge to certain people. There's Criminon, where the Church of Scientology gives out materials like the Way to Happiness program to different prisons and jails across the United States and around the world.
Criminon. I like that.
Yeah, and to be, when most people hear that, they think that the materials that Scientology is giving out are things to like brainwash them with Scientology dogma or religious scripture.
I was gonna say like any other religion.
Really. Well, I mean, you watched the Way to Happiness movie with me. That movie and the stuff in those materials are about as irreligious and basic as you can possibly get.
I should probably rewatch that.
I mean, it really just talks about different things about what you can try to do to take care of yourself and your life and every aspect of your life to be a better person. And there is no talk of auditing, no talk of the Thetan, no talk of anything like that related to Scientology in Narcanon or Criminon. So the fact that so many people think that it's like brainwashing to get people to become Scientologists is just straight up wrong. You can read even the free pamphlet of The Way to Happiness or watch the movie that we're talking about. It's also free on the Scientology.tv website. I mean, I can't stress to you enough how basic the principles that that program teaches. And so I wanted to kind of go over that because the church does provide things for free. And that kind of leads into the way that Scientology does hold, I don't want to say church on Sundays, they hold like a service, and even that isn't really what it is. I mean, they'll usually just go in and show you videos or talk about things that from materials that normally you would pay money for.
When I hear service, I think of like a funeral.
Yeah, I mean, Scientology doesn't really do funerals, speaking of those, because Scientologists don't think of death as an end. Each life you live is a cycle, so death isn't really something to be mourned. He talks about that in and multiple Scientology books. Scientology weddings, again, it's a pretty bog standard, almost irreligious service. So if you were going to get a, like, if you were going to get a fancy, nice marriage ceremony in an irreligious way, that's a good way to think of how Scientology's weddings would work. And that may, that experience may differ to different people, different Scientologists at different levels and with different crowd sizes. The ones that I saw and what I read when reading the Scientology Minister's book, which is a book you have to read to become an actual minister in Scientology, you, to do weddings.
You went to a, you actually saw this.
I saw, yeah, when I lived in North Idaho, there was two different weddings that I went to in Seattle.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that was more, I needed a reason to go. And so, that kind of, so when you go to one of the Sunday services, I went to many of those over the last, before I split ways with the Church of Scientology, I was going every weekend to the Ideal Org. And so that's pretty much what it was. It would be people reading different postulates or different axioms in the church, different things like that, and talking about it or talking about wins. Wins is an important part of Scientology. It's something we're going to talk about more in just a little bit. But it was, you know, congratulating different people on their wins and or watching different materials from L. Ron Hubbard, different movies or lectures, that kind of thing. So, and their debt, and it's nowhere near as long as your typical. I don't know how long other religious services are, but a typical mass or a typical service for your general Christian denomination. The next thing I wanted to talk about is kind of to continue with that streak. A lot of people think that Scientologists have a deity, and in particular, they think that deity is a very specific person that they have seen talked about in cartoons of certain names, which I will talk about later. I'll reiterate, I will talk about this later, but Scientology does not have a deity. There isn't one. There is an eighth dynamic, which is the God dynamic, but I mean, if you watch The Fundamentals of Thought, you will see it is not the kind of God concept or deity that you may think of. And in that same vein, Scientologists don't pray because there is no one to pray to. There may be, if you just use Dianetics, you can still be a Christian or a Muslim or Islam or a Jew or any other religion and pray to your God and use Dianetics and use the what Dianetics refers to in the spiritual realm to be your soul and use Dianetics in that way. But if you're a Scientologist and you go far enough up the bridge to cross from Dianetics into Scientology, then Scientology does not have a God, and there is no prayer. And that kind of leads us into auditing. Most Scientologists try to get audited pretty regularly. You don't pay for auditing by session. You pay for it by time. So you get, like, 3 hours of Dianetic auditing at a time for X amount of dollars. And you can use that session time in any interval that you want to. Every Scientologist does this pretty regularly to the best that they can, whether it's co-auditing or auditing with somebody in an org. And then what you can do from there is you can go into how you can audit yourself. And there are two different kinds of that. There is self-analysis, which is Dianetic self-auditing in a way. It's called self-processing, but to keep things as simplified as possible, you're basically teaching yourself how to do as good of auditing as possible. It almost prepares you to be audited by someone else better. It helps you try to get through your precepts, which is your percepts, your different perceptions that you will, that an auditor is going to be looking for when auditing you through an Ingram or an incident or a recall exercise.
I was going to say, when you shorten perception to percepts, I wondered what that was, and then right after you said what it was.
Yeah, there's a lot of shortened words, shortened terminology in Scientology, and I think it's because L. Ron Hubbard wrote so many frickin' words that he stopped wanting to write the whole thing, honestly.
Say, that makes me think of the kids these days and all the fucking, like, LOL and all the
yeah.
dumb crap.
There's a lot of abbreviations, too, that's for sure. If you're doing Dianetics self-analysis, that's just a pretty straightforward. The book self-analysis is a really good tool in general, even if you don't care about anything else with Dianetics or anything else with Scientology. The book itself is just a really good tool to calm yourself down. It's a good exercise to be able to do in general in your life. For quite a while, I was taking an hour after work to do self-analysis drills on myself, and it was nice. But then if you're doing Scientology self-auditing, that's actually called solo auditing. You have to be specifically taught how to do that. I was never taught to do solo auditing. There's materials that you can read about for solo auditing and techniques and books that anybody can get, like the A Handbook for Scientologists. That's a good book that kind of goes over different. It gives you a good idea of what is in solo auditing. Solo auditing is also used typically with an e-meter. And I wanted to talk about this too, because I saw this talked about more than once. A lot of people say that the e-meter is pointless because you can deliberately fuck with the results. And I would say, yes, that is true. They tell you that, and they show you that the first time you're ever shown an e-meter. They show you after, even the difference from before and after you clean your hands off, how different your reading on the machine looks.
What?
Yeah. So, when they put them in the can, give you the cans, and they take you through the steps, which, you know, this is, I learned how to do this when I was learning to use the e-meter.
Is that what they're called, is cans?
The parts that you hold are colloquially? I don't know.
I know this word.
Yeah,
it's written on the whiteboard.
Colloquially. Yeah, and are known as cans. And so when people say that you can deliberately alter the results of an e-meter, an e-meter may have similar components to a lie detector, but it's not the same thing. If you were trying to deceive the e-meter, it would be very stupid of you to pay thousands of dollars for something you were going to deliberately fuck up.
Oh, no kidding.
So that's why they give you specific instructions on how to sit. The person who is watching the e-meter is going to be watching how you hold the cans, because everybody says if you just squeeze the cans or something, it will change the reading. Well, no shit. Their auditor is looking right at you. If they see you do that, they're going to know that you are affecting the results of the e-meter.
Also, I want to say, who would waste thousands of dollars in this economy?
Huh? I mean, seriously, whether you pay for metered auditing or you get it for free because you work at an org or you're in the C org, why would anybody who wants to get the real results from the e-meter deliberately screw with those results? Obviously, you can skew them if you want to, but if you want the results enough to pay for them, why would you deliberately skew those results? A lot of people to that question would say, well, they skew the results because they want to move up the bridge, which is also wrong. In Scientology, your different levels on the bridge, whether it's clear, OT1, or OT8, you're not given those ranks by anybody. You don't achieve them or accomplish them. You get the materials for the courses as prerequisites for that. And then once you've done all of them, you attest to the state. You are the one who decides that you are there. So nobody is withholding you from moving up the bridge. The only time that that's going to happen is if you try to fast track yourself, which is against the rules in the Church of Scientology, because it used to happen so much in the 60s and 70s where people would try to do as many courses as possible to go flying up the bridge.
Those damn hippies.
Yeah, and not pay attention to what they were doing. And so now the Church of Scientology has safeguards to prevent you from doing that, which isn't to say that people still can't ascend the bridge very quickly. At every New Year's celebration, they celebrate people from the bottom of the bridge to the top who accomplish moving up the bridge in a large amount, go up the bridge a lot in a small amount of time. But now there's way more strict tests and questions on the materials and things like that to prevent you from just skipping past stuff just so you can get higher on the bridge. But other than that, I mean, even if somebody says they think that you're being fast-tracked, you can still attest to those levels anyway. They're not going to block you from being able to do it. So if that's not a factor, there is no reason to deliberately screw with e-meter auditing. There is nothing to accomplish from it, other than for if you were trying to prove a point, the point would have already been proven when the metered auditor told you that you can fuck with the e-meter by not doing it right, which would render it pointless. So a lot of people don't know that, and I just wanted to make that clear because I see that in other medias all the time, but there, and I saw it mentioned in two different emails, and I wanted to mention that. I got this question as well. I don't have an e-meter. I was trained on the modern version of the e-meter, and that version of the e-meter, you actually have to plug into your computer, and this Church of Scientology will calibrate the machine and verify your IAS credentials. So since I let my IAS membership expire last month, I cannot use one of those e-meters anymore, even if I had one.
Okay.
So, it's pretty easy to get the previous model, the Mark 7 or 6.
Could I get one?
Get what?
Or do I have to be the e-meter? Do I have to be like a part of the church to do that?
I could still get one, but I would have to be an IAS member with permission to use an e-meter.
Well, then how expensive are they?
The current e-meter, I think, is $2,000 or $5,000.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. What about the antique model?
So the older version, I was looking at those.
Probably might be a little more pricier.
I could get one of the previous e-meters for about $450, which was wouldn't be that bad. The only thing is that meter works very differently to the current one.
Yeah, so modern science.
Yeah, so because you would have to calibrate the machine and everything yourself.
I don't want to do all that work.
I don't know how to do that with that version of the e-meter.
Watch YouTube videos.
Well, I think that if you did that, then any of those kind of videos probably get smacked down pretty quickly.
But damn copyright.
I did want to talk about that because somebody asked me if I had an e-meter, and I wanted to say, just wanted to clarify that no. I was trained how to use an e-meter, but I don't have one. When I was going to the church, I was using an e-meter provided by the church. I also wanted to kind of give an idea of wins, because that's a big part of Scientology in general. Throughout the week, L. Ron Hubbard's philosophy on what a life well lived was is two main points, and it was, did you do what you wanted to do? Did you do what you wanted to do? And were people happy that you were alive? And so Scientologists kind of keep that philosophy going by, on a weekly basis, they'll try to write down wins. It doesn't have to be religious. It's just, I mean, that's kind of common to what a lot of people do to try and keep track of how they grow as a person. Very similar concept to that. Keep track of your wins. If you have a good win, you can write it on a board and put it on the bulletin board in the Church of Scientology. Like I said, they'll talk about wins. People can get up and share their wins during a Sunday service or during one of Scientology's holidays. And we'll talk about those holidays in a little bit here, too.
You're saying wins?
Wins, W-I-N-S, things that you have won at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Charlie Sheen kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
so,
minus the tiger blood and cigarettes.
Yeah, as well. And so that's a big part of it, too, is they try to keep you mindful of doing things for the world to have accomplishments, and then you keep track of them as a win and talk about it. Scientology doesn't shun you from success in the same way that other religions do, like the sin of pride. They think that accomplishments that you make, especially when you're helping other people, are things to be exalted.
Original sin?
Well, yeah, that's a concept for plenty of Christians, Muslims, and Hebrews to debate amongst themselves.
I didn't know that was a thing other than Christianity. Well, I guess that's really all that I know. Not that I'm religious at all.
Yeah, the holidays. So I kind of wanted to touch on this too, because this was a question that I've been asked in general before. What holidays do Scientologists celebrate? In a religious way, Scientology doesn't really have holidays.
You got the day off for President's Day.
Not that
has anything to do with this.
Yeah, that's a
lucky SOB.
I definitely wish that I could claim some of the holidays in the church for days off at work.
Oh, that'd be
but
cool.
It's really the two biggest days of the church are going to be New Year's, which, you know, general celebration, nothing really religious. And L. Ron Hubbard's birthday, which, again, isn't really religious. It's just more like a big party that everybody goes to, and you just kind of talk. You're not indoctrinated with anything. You're not forced to sit and watch any kind of materials. Everybody just kind of gets together and talks and really just has fun. That's pretty much all there is. They get really cool, really beautiful birthday cakes. People bring food. It's just fun. And that was where I saw just how many people, our local org in here in Salt Lake City is not very big. And so I was surprised at how many people showed up for the L. Ron Hubbard birthday thing that I went to. There was a lot of people there.
When was this?
I think it's February 15th of last year. I can't remember for sure when his birthday is.
Damn.
Not a very good... March 13th, that's when I went.
Oh.
Not a very good Scientologist that I don't know off the back of my hand.
You know, his birthday's coming up.
Yeah, and so that's pretty much it. But Scientologists still celebrate the community aspects of other major religions. Every Scientologist that I know still celebrates Christmas. But Christmas in the sense of a time for giving, a time to be together, a time for presents,
Santa,
and all of that shit. I mean, the Church of Scientology puts on the biggest Christmas event in Los Angeles, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, they make a bunch of snow around the church so the kids who live in L.A. can play in real snow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's... I mean...
They should just go up to Big Bear. It's not that far away.
Well, I don't know about that. With Christmas, they do stuff for Hanukkah, they do stuff for Ramadan, they do stuff for Easter, they do stuff for Passover. I mean, it's more about being involved with the community and, like I said, trying to do things for other people than it being a religious thing. It's not like the Jehovah's Witnesses where they don't celebrate those things.
They also don't leave you alone when you answer the door.
That's way very true. But that's kind of... Scientologists do celebrate all of those. So, Merry Christmas, Happy Easter, Happy Hanukkah, blah, blah, blah. They're going to celebrate all of that stuff,
Wasn't
too.
Wasn't that originally like a pagan thing, Christmas?
There's a bunch of stuff about that, but there are different articles that question how correct it is. There's an Egyptian god that it's shown to be a lot based on, as well as a Roman or Romanesque Greek god, one of the two. But I don't know. There's
not to go on a side trail.
But... yeah, that I mean. Every especially back then, the entire Roman Empire was built on assimilating other cultures. So the fact that the Roman Catholic Church and Christianity as a whole sprang from Rome, in general, not to say it's not, you know, based in Judea or whatever, but the fact that it had all those Roman ideals, of course it stole from a bunch of other religions. That's, of course it did. But anyway, I wanted to talk about the format of the show. It's going to kind of be based on the guide to the materials. You can get that for free or look at it online. It's a big, big picture of every piece of materials in the Church of Scientology. And so that's kind of the guide that we'll be following. And of course, we're going to start with where it all started, which is Dianetics. And I even wrote this down to specifically make this clear because of some of the questions that I was getting through Facebook and through emails, asking me about certain parts of Scientology tech policy and materials. I'm not an OT. I never attested to be an OT. And I also wanted to say, I also never attested to going clear. That is still a goal that I would like to achieve, is to achieve clear. But I was never there. I was more focused on working my own way up to help other people than getting to clear myself. And so with books like Self-Analysis and the Handbook for Pre-Clears, which I kind of talked about a little bit earlier, I noticed when I was in the Ideal Org that a lot of Scientologists don't like to mention this, but it specifically says in Handbook for Pre-Clears that with Self-Analysis and Handbook for Pre-Clears, you can go clear all by yourself. You don't need to be audited. You don't need any other tools. With those two books and the effort, you can go clear by yourself, which we kind of talked about in the last episode. I lived so far away from every other Scientologist that those books were foundationally what I was trying to use to go clear. And still am now. I think way too many people want to be clear so bad that they lie about actually being clear. It's not easy, but people want the achievement without achieving it. So that's why I've never lied about that and never attested to clear, because I know that I'm not, even though I really wanted to be, and it would have been great to get a big round of applause for attesting to it at the org. So I just wanted to make that clear. I know a shitload of stuff about Scientology because I have a very good memory, much to the annoyance of almost everybody around me.
Yep.
And so I remember almost everything from every book about Scientology that I read. Everything from the beginning with Dianetics all the way up to A Handbook for Scientologists. I remember almost everything. And so I've been working my way through lectures as well, but the lectures are either way too expensive or way too hard to find, and the Church of outside of getting them directly from the Church of Scientology, where they're even more expensive.
Just go on the black market.
Well, I wish that that was an easier way to... If I could find it, I might try it. That's why I know so much about everything that we talk about. In some ways, I would say that I have gained some aspects of perfect recall that L. Ron Hubbard was talking about with Dianetics from doing it, because Self-Analysis is so heavily focused on memory, and so is all of Dianetics. But I would say that that played a role in why my memory is so good, especially with visio recall, which in Dianetics and that kind of thing would be visual recall. When I remember things from the books, I can see the book, see the page, and see it in front of me, and that's how I remember it.
So, visio is short for vision?
The word vision comes from visio. So visio is the original word.
What is that,
word.
Latin?
Probably. Most of the stuff in Dianetics is either Greek or Latin, because Dianetics is Greek and then Latin.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's all of them. There's visio recall, sonic recall, touch recall, etc., etc.
I was going to say, I know that's a TV brand, but that's
okay. Yeah. So that's why I know so much about this. And I have read materials beyond where I'm supposed to be in Scientology purely for the method of doing this podcast and in general and talking about it, because Scientology tells you from the get-go, don't believe things unless you know the data. Stay, you know, if you don't learn everything about data, it becomes unstable and creates confusion. So when I got a piece of data, which everybody is going to get or probably already has about Scientology, you have to know everything about it or it's going to create confusion. You have to make the data stable is the words that the church uses, is stable data to prevent confusion or stupidity, which is an actual specific word that the church uses. If you make a decision or choice based on unstable or incomplete data, they just straight up call that stupidity. And so that's why I never went into the orgs ever talking about any of this, because I knew that it would piss people off. They didn't know me well enough to know my intentions behind talking about any
freaking
of this.
People.
But, I mean, if you've ever wondered why, if you go up to a Scientologist and start talking about certain things, why they're going to get pissed off at you or just walk away, it's not because they explicitly don't want to talk to you about it. It's because they know that you're not interested in the answer. You just want to make fun of them. And so, I mean, even just that first episode, which we got plenty of very nice responses to, there were others where certain people would say, you guys, and I use those in air quotes, referring to me and the Church of Scientology, are horrible and ruin people's lives. And, you know, other people who are saying, that I'm such a bad person and how embarrassing it must be for what I believe and things like that. I mean, when I went to the Ideal Org, there would be protesters in front of the church screaming shit like that. That happened multiple times just in Salt Lake City. And so most people, I mean, people say, why don't Scientologists ever say, here I am, I'm a Scientologist, is because you get so much bullshit from people who don't know anything and aren't interested in learning anything.
Well, that, and when you say that, as you guys, you in the Church of Scientology, all that, ruin people's lives and stuff, that instantly made me think of the Christian church and how many children have been molested and how many lives that has ruined.
Yeah, I mean,
and Christianity certainly is not the only bad religion out there.
Yeah, and I mean, we will talk about some of the Church of Scientology's scandals at us, and I use that word very loosely, as you'll understand why later.
Well, but also I want to add the higher ups.
Right.
Those are the main bad people.
I mean, that's what I want to say to, when people say that shit to me, I always want to be like, yeah, thank you for saying that. Now me, David Miscavige, and Tom Cruise have to go get on a plane to go beat people up.
Yeah, we need to go have a chat.
I swear.
See who needs to disappear.
That is genuinely the reason that I wanted to do this in the first place, is because if anybody even is interested in learning the actual answer, I want to be able to provide it, because I think the church does a horrible job at that.
I have not seen any of these emails, by the way. It's only this guy over here.
Yeah. They're right here on our Gmail at any point. But
oh, we have it? Oh, it's mine too?
Yeah, the ScientologyChat@gmail.com. Okay, this is where you can email at any point.
You're going to have to give me the password to that at some point.
Yeah. What was I going to say before that? Now I can't remember.
Sorry about that.
Oh, going clear and all of that jazz. So yeah, that's gonna, I wanted to wrap all of that up so that it could be made, that it would all be understandable about why, about how even though I'm not clear and have never attested to clear or an OT level, I still know all about it because I needed to. Because I was introduced to a piece of unstable data, and all of you Scientologists and former Scientologists will know what I mean by this. Because I was introduced to a piece of unstable data, I needed to get all of the facts around it for it to become stable and prevent confusion so that all of my study, everything else to do with Scientology, wouldn't fall apart. Since I now know that a lot of the people who listen to this are either a Scientologist or a former Scientologist. One of the two.
Are there no virgins in here, like me?
Well, I definitely saw that we had a lot of people from Italy, Australia, and Jordan, so
oh.
I can't imagine that we must have a couple of people who don't really have an inside view of Scientology.
And those are the people that enjoy my interruptions and stuff.
Yeah, I think so. So with Dianetics, I'm just going to give you kind of a brief overview. Scientology, Dianetics is such a huge-ass book that I can't ask you to read it, though I wish that you would if you haven't.
Just watch the movie.
I mean, well, Dianetics doesn't have a movie,
but it
does have an audiobook, but the audiobook is 19 hours and 34 minutes long.
Holy crap. Yeah. That's going to take...
And that's all one reading. So if you're gonna have to split it up, but... If you can read it, you definitely should, so you can get an idea of the very basics, because most of the people who talk shit about Dianetics or Scientology have no idea what is in that book. For example, the people, one thing most people may know but not understand is why Dianetics says that you have three minds. That would be the analytical mind, the reactive mind, and the somatic mind. I can give you a basic definition of that if you don't know, but you're going to have to read the book to get, or ask me a specific question and I will give you a specific answer.
I'll take the brief explanation.
Basically, if you look at it from the bottom with the least amount of thought to the top, if you think of your mind, the bottom is the somatic mind. That would be where all of your bodily functions and nerve system controls happen. Everything that your body does that Scientology calls an automatic action.
So it's like muscle memory and stuff like that.
Anything that you do where you don't have to think about it to be able to do it.
Okay.
And so from there, it's the reactive mind, which the definition of the reactive mind is the place in the mind where everything is stored when a person is in a state of unconsciousness. And that doesn't actually mean that you've been hit over the head and knocked out. That just means anything where you reach a level of... The best way to think of it is going to be if you get so worked up because you're afraid or angry or sad, anything like that where you get yourself so worked up that you are not thinking clearly, then that is literally what your reactive mind would mean. You're not thinking clearly because you are in a lesser state of unconsciousness. Most people, when they get super pissed off or super scared, when they come out of it, they don't even remember what just happened. So that would be what that means, is a lesser state of unconsciousness. And so when bad things happen to you, or especially when you get physically hurt and your body has to put you in some various state of unconsciousness to protect your brain from overloading, like shock, then what happens to you in that state is called an engram. And that is stored in your reactive mind, so that your body can save it as an instinct, so if something similar happens again, it triggers that instinct to protect you from that happening again. That would be where Dianetics explains where instincts come from. If you get hurt by something, your body remembers subconsciously what hurt you so that it can try and protect you from it happening again.
That makes me, I don't know why my mind goes to this, but the... how your eyes only have pain receptors because evolution is strongly incentivized to not scratch your cornea with your fingernails.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely makes putting contacts in hard for the first couple months.
People say my eyes are itchy, but they're not. It's just the membranes around your eyes.
Yeah. And so that is a good example of learn things over time. When you're subjected to pain, or a lot of kids fall down the stairs or things like... or
Touch the stove.
Yeah, the stove is a great example. Or claustrophobia. Claustrophobia is probably one of the most common and widespread psychosomatic illnesses, because almost anybody who ever had claustrophobia had an instance of getting locked in the closet, getting locked in the trunk, getting trapped somewhere in a confined space. And so your body tries to protect you from that happening again by recognizing any enclosed space as being like the space that put you in danger before.
Which also reminds me, if anybody is claustrophobic and don't like going into the MRIs?
Oh, yeah.
We watched a video the other day of when the cover is taken off of those and all the shit inside that gigantic thing of where you're in the middle of is spinning around. Is pretty nuts.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's a good thing they put the cover on, that's for sure. So that's kind of the idea with what I just said about claustrophobia, about how your mind only sees similarities. That's why in Dianetics there is something L. Ron Hubbard says, that the reactive mind is important but stupid, because it only sees in similarities. It only thinks in similarities. It doesn't think in differences. So with claustrophobia, if you got locked in a trunk and that was the catalyst for your claustrophobia, your reactive mind, any other time that you are in an enclosed space, only sees what is called in Dianetics A equals A equals A equals A, which means your brain is seeing enclosed space equals danger equals trunk equals fear response. It doesn't think in this enclosed space is different than the one that I was in danger with, so the response is not necessary. And so that is why how the reactive mind works. Whereas your analytical mind is the top of the one. That's your obvious. I mean, with the word analytical, I'm sure you can infer what that means. But that is the part of your brain that thinks with logic. So the goal of Dianetics is to get you in auditing to find an engram by doing a recall exercise. You go into the engram and work your way through it. And this is why auditing is different than hypnosis, because hypnosis is the power of suggestion, whereas auditing is all about you using your analytical mind while recalling something reactive to get rid of the charge. So if you were we keep using the claustrophobia as an example. If we found the earliest example of you being trapped in something, your earliest experience of claustrophobia, and I were to audit you and ask you to recall a time where you were a small enclosed space, and you found that, I would then ask you, you would visually see the place, you would try to hear what you can hear, you would access the memory as best as you can, and try to do it and do as much as you can with that, and then the goal would be, as you're looking through a memory that you begin in with your reactive mind, by the end, with my probing questions and your specific logical answers, we can move that piece of data or that engram out of the reactive mind and into the analytical one. That is how auditing, in a very basic sense, works, to get your mind to start thinking about these events in a state of unconsciousness logically. And so that is a very basic understanding. The auditor's code, I wanted to talk about that too, but the biggest part of the auditor's code has to do with what I wanted to say about hypnosis, because the most important rule of the auditor's code is you cannot give the person you are auditing information. So if I were to say, if we were using that same example and you are auditing somebody and they're talking about a claustrophobia event, you can't say, do you hear music? you would have to say, what do you hear? Because you can't give them any kind of trigger to give them a suggestion. That is the fundamental thing that makes Dianetics different from hypnosis, even if the mental state or what you look like may be relatively similar. You can't put something into the head of somebody you are auditing. That is the biggest break of the rules that you can do in all of Scientology, basically. Because if you put it in their head, you could even fuck with them more and make it so that their claustrophobia could, if they start to remember being trapped in an enclosed space with listening to music, you can make them conflate the two things. So there are some great examples of that with hypnosis that I would definitely recommend watching, where people can link two completely unrelated things to the same thing and then have the same response to either of those things when it makes no logical sense. That's kind of a brief overview of what we wanted to talk about. We'll definitely go into more about Dianetics. I'll answer more of the questions. If you have any other questions, try to make them as specific as possible. Broad topics are going to be covered on this show over many episodes. So if you have something specific you want me to answer, definitely let me know. It's ScientologyChat, all one word, at gmail.com. And then we are going to try to do this twice a week. We're going to aim for Sunday and Thursday. And then you can also go to our YouTube channel. It's just ScientologyChat on YouTube. Eventually, we're going to do live streams as well. That's the particular way that I really want to do an episode where we talk about the Trapped in the Closet episode. So definitely, if you want to, find your way over there. It'll also be a good way to keep track of when new episodes come out if you don't subscribe or follow us. I think that pretty much sums up everything for today. Was there anything else you can think of?
World peace, question everything, read.
Yeah, read. If only that was as common now as it was before.
Well, I mean, it seems like, society doesn't really encourage reading and all that too much today.
Yeah, I would say that is accurate. But thank you so much, everybody. We will be back on Sunday. Send us over your questions. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much, and have a good rest of your night.
Bye.